Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Hi, I'm Sarah Smith. If you're the type of person that goes to Liberty as other people would go on safari, and the fact that John Lewis doesn't have a funeral service makes you fret, Sarah Smith cleaning cloths are for you. Sarah Smith, available from Sainsbury's, for the posher washer. Proud sponsors of Dumpty Dum.
Hello, Dumpty Dummers. Kat Brown here. If you found life in Ambridge a bit stressful of late, a bit lacking in baking competitions and double entendres that don't involve Lillian entering her gentleman's buttonhole, as excellent as that was, then may I make a very polite suggestion? Search for Soggy Bottoms in your podcasting toolkit and you'll head over to a Great British Bake Off fan podcast. In our latest episode, we interview Anna Tregorin herself, actress Aunt Isabel Middleton, about that storyline and her love of buns. So, if that sounds tempting, add us to your iTunes playlist. Even if we moulder away there like that Nutribullet you bought in 2014, we'll still love you very much, especially if you call in via Speakpipe. On your marks, get set, speak!
Hello, Oliver Sterling here. I just thought I'd ring in to say I'm about to give everybody wonderful, life-changing news once again.
No, it's not really. It's William the Gardener from South London. Just thought I'd ring in and not rant about Rob immediately. Leave that to a little later. Yeah, so, Oliver, are you Jesus Christ? Are you the saviour of everyone in Ambridge? Well, not everyone, but just the Grundys. How many times? How much more? But it was worth it, wasn't it? Because old Chief Grundy himself was blown away. Blown away with joy. It was almost worth it just for the sheer joy of Joe's voice. Matched with William's sliding decay and hatred of his father. But, you know, what would the Archers be unless the Grundys were killing each other or hating each other? But, yes, just quickly back to Rob. Helen, what's he going to do next? I'm telling you right now that there is going to be some explosion, either with his fists, with a gun, with a knife. Oh, knife again. Geez Louise, I think it's going to be God darn amazing. Whatever happens, it's going to be big. Someone's going to die here. I'm thinking maybe some revenge on Anna Tregorin. But I don't want that because she's lovely. But yeah, just quickly before I go back to the weeds and the dogs. Loving it. Loving last week's pod. Well done, Chaparoos. Can't wait for next week's Omnibus. I just think, personally, it's all going to end terribly badly for the Archers. I mean, Helen, that is. Someone's going to die. Anyway, it's probably going to be Rob, basically. But anyway, bye-bye, and thanks for Dumpty Dum, and thanks for everything. And back to the weeds I go.
This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality ducky drama that's centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the naked breakfast chef that is Royfield Brown, and with me I have the scorched Pop-Tart that is...
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of our brekkie bonanza, folks, is you. Now, today's Dumpty Dum comes from Pam Cruikshank and the assorted Snowdrop Potters of Shaftesbury, who spent Friday night preparing for the Shaftesbury Snowdrop Festival in February 27th. Wait a minute. They were preparing for a festival in February
They have to plant the snowdrops, you Wally. They don't. You don't go and buy them from a florist, do you?
What do you mean you plant a snowdrop? Don't they fall from the sky?
Yes, Roy Feld.
Seriously, I don't know what I'm reading here.
Snowdrop flowers. Don't you know what they are?
No.
Are you kidding me?
I have no idea.
They're little white flowers that come out in February.
What? And they only grow in Shaftesbury?
What?
The Shaftesbury Snowdrop Festival.
Shaftesbury is a place in Dorset.
That I know. I've been there. It's very pretty.
Yes, especially in February when all the snowdrops are out. So pretty, in fact, that Shaftesbury has created its own snowdrop festival. But you have to plant the snowdrops before, otherwise they won't be flowering in February.
But so don't they
pull up in bulbs.
But wait a minute. Don't they just regrow every year?
No.
I'm confused.
They pop them up and leave them in nice places to make it all look pretty.
But why don't they regrow back from the place they planted them last year?
Because some bulbs only last a few years. They don't go on and on forever.
Gosh.
You know who we're going to have ringing in next week, don't we? My bloody mother, who's going to know all about snowdrops and will leave us a 25-minute message explaining
That would be awesome, because I love your mum. She called in that one time.
No, she didn't.
Yeah, she did.
She didn't. That was my friend Barbara.
Oh.
Who got it all muddled.
Oh, okay.
Yes, that's Barbara.
Well, wasn't Barbara a friend of your mum's, though?
No.
Oh, okay. Then your sister emailed me about a week ago.
She
said, I'm the Freeman that you like. She wasn't wrong, though. She wasn't wrong.
What does she email you about?
Mind your own beeswax. Between me and her. Anyway, now you've kind of cleared up the whole Shaftesbury Snowdrop Festival February 2017 thing. By the way, Shaftesbury people, thank you for your dum-de-dum. If somebody else wants to send us a dum-de-dum, Lucy, or tell us about their snowdrop festival, are there any other snowdrop festivals in the UK?
I don't know. It's a lovely thing to do, though. I hope there are.
You know what? This is just too twee and too English.
I know. It's too... Yeah, I know. People in... We've... One of the women that rang in today is a farmer from Tasmania. She's going to be listening to this thinking, what the bloody hell are they on about?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, right, if you're a farmer from Tasmania, or maybe you're a rancher from Patagonia, or maybe you're a warlord from Mongolia, and you want to send us a dum-de-dum, Lucy, how can they do that?
If you'd like to sing us a dum-de-dum, give us a plot prediction or shout, get off my land, when someone has sex with your daughter, then ring us on 0203-031-3105 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thank you to Cosmo for his podcast roundups, to Sarah Smith for sponsoring us, and to Derek for the loan of the back bedroom. Derek is knackered as he's done an enormously long charity ride, which I think probably people know about because we posted it on the Twitters. Yes. He says he is shocked at the doping in cycling scandal that's currently affecting Bradley Wiggins at the moment. And he says that he wants to reassure everyone that the most he's ever done before a charity cycle is have a good hard suck on a fisherman's friend.
That's really naughty.
On with the call.
Innuendo abounds on this podcast, Lucy.
It does. And calls, of which we have 27 gajillion.
We do. I actually thought the number had gone down a little, but you're telling me it hasn't.
You've forgotten all the messages.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Right. On this week's episode, we have calls from William, who thinks Oliver is God. Claire from
Clapham. Can I just say that William is my new favourite caller in the world? I love William.
Do you remember? Right,
he's replaced everybody. Andrew Horn, ex-Dormouse, whole lot.
Really?
Yep.
Why?
I don't know. He's just great. He's really funny.
Don't you think you should have really...
And he's a gardener and he's got a dog and he's out in the rain and he just sounds nice.
Claire from Clapham, who wants to know why Lewis isn't dead yet. Yokel Bear, who's threatening to lose his shit. Rachel, who thinks Dr. Locke dresses like a geography teacher. Auntie Jean, who's sporting a gentleman's buttonhole. Leslie wants to hear from Susan. Jan from Cannes, who's arguing with Royford. Eh?
Yes.
No, Jan, don't argue with me. I love her. That's really...
Because I love you. That's why I'm arguing with you.
Oh, okay. No, that's true. That's a critical friend, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. There's a circle of love between us, Jan. So actually, I know that
you're... Not in a Rob sort of way. A nice circle of love.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. Lady Garth Garth, who feels sorry for Ursula. Oh, gosh.
I know. A bit of a contentious call, that one.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's a contentious comment on Facebook, but I'll come to that later. Okay. You know, I wanted to respond and I thought, no, because the whole world might just fall in on my head. Ellen, who has a titchy knob prediction. Christina, who has a Frere Brethren prediction. Everyone's got predictions. Chris, who's got a Joe prediction. Glyn, who thinks Roy may be deaf. I'm going to say that again. Glyn, who minks. Glyn, who thinks Roy may be deaf. Bye bye. Sorry. Bye-bye. Steve, who's grumpy. Andrew Horn, who's standing up for the script writers. Witherspoon, who thinks he's heard the word of God. Sam Dean, who's relieved everyone's home. Claire from Clapham, who's still wondering where everybody's gone. Bill, who thinks he's been toyed with. Andrew White, who's a Charlie. Fiona, who thinks everyone's stupid. And Debs, who wants to know what the social worker's playing at. But first, before the multitude of caller inroads, it's Lucy Juicy Freeman's Week in Ambridge.
We started the week with Helen in Bridge Farm. Let's just let that sink in for a little bit. Excellent! My favourite sound effect of the week was the satisfying clunk of the door shutting in Rob's face. Pat has finally found her cojones and Rob, quite frankly, is being punished enough by having to share the house with Ursula. Titchy Knob attended the family court and said, "But I am the best father in the world, definitely. I was voted father of the year 14 times in a row and I am myself the greatest man in the world, so I should look after both children, definitely. Anyway, she can't have them because she gets her hair cut sometimes, which shows she is evil and not as good as me. He's so delusional he makes Geoffrey Archer look like a harsh realist." Lillian announced her intention of entering her gentleman's buttonhole, and Ian announced how annoyed he was that Adam had been entering lots of other gentlemen's buttonholes. Adam was cringily nice to Ian, who was concerned about his roving eye. It wasn't just his eye that was roving, Ian, but I'm sure you'll find that out at some point. William finally cottoned on to the fact that little Georgie had been accompanying Eddie on his foraging expeditions. William stamped about and his vowels went all peculiar, which is always a sign that he's overwrought. We had a weird little exchange in which three generations of the same family, Joe, William and George, all talked to each other in entirely different accents from entirely different parts of Britain. But we got the gist. William is furious, George has yet to learn when to shut up, and Eddie's a bloody idiot. Caroline would not stop talking about securing Tuscany. What, all of it? She's starting to sound like Mussolini. Oliver sounded as if he'd much rather sit in a bungalow in Pennyhasset, watching Cash in the Attic and buying car cleaning kits off QVC, not swanning about Italy in a Panama hat looking at Etruscan ruins. However, the decision was made for him. Joe did a spin job on Oliver unparalleled since Alistair Campbell's weapons of mass destruction. Joe's actual weapons of mass destruction, as we know, are his underpants, but he's managed to convince Oliver that he will spontaneously combust the second the new owners move into Grange Farm. Fortunately, there aren't any new owners, as understandably, no one wants to live in a tributary of the River Am, which is what Grange Farm has recently become, due to either A, the loss of a sycamore tree, B, Stefan bunging at the culvert, or C, the well-known Grange Farm spring, depending on which internet rumour you believe. They tried selling it, riverside dwelling, wood suit, otter or small wading bird, but it didn't happen. And Oliver fell for it all, much to Caroline's lemon-sucking annoyance. So the Grundys are staying.
Mm-hmm.
To no one's surprise whatsoever, Kirsty and Tom got it together, which Kirsty sensibly described as a release of tension and no big deal, and Tom described as, "Whoa!" There was more of that sort of thing over at Rickyard. where Josh walked in and found a naked Toby waving his golden grahams around in the kitchen. Nobody cooks breakfast naked. If you're a woman in a rom-com, then you put on the shirt of the man you spent the night with, which amazingly A, fits, and B, doesn't smell of PO. And if you're a man in a comedy, you put on the woman's frilly dressing gown for amusingness purposes. And if you're in a gritty drama, then you wear a t-shirt and pants. Nobody cooks in the nip in a strange kitchen because fat spits, crumbs itch, and dogs can be far too interested in the things that dangle about. Josh astonishingly failed to dob his sister in immediately and waited a courteous 5 minutes before posting it to the Borsetshire Echo. Meanwhile, we need to say goodbye this week. Goodbye to a man to whom we all have a debt of honour, a man we probably may not hear of again. He steered us through the recent traumatic events with great skill. And although we all had our doubts, me in particular, he got us there in the end and we'll miss him greatly. Judge Loomis, we salute you. The end.
Oh, that's really good. I actually did enjoy that this week. Well done, Lucy. Though, of course, I have to pull you up on some of your references.
I know what you're going to say now.
What am I going to say?
You're going to say Mussolini in Tuscany.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I heard you go when I said it. Here we go. So I sped up so you couldn't get in. It's like when you're in a line of traffic and someone's trying to come in from the left and you think, no, you're a bugger, you're not coming in. That's what I did.
Well, you know, I love me a bit of Italy and especially Italian history. But if you're going to secure Tuscany, surely you're talking about Count Cavour, the Sardinian Prime Minister, and King Victor Emmanuel.
Well, duh. I mean, of course I am.
Absolutely. You know, I was like, come on, Lucy. This is like, you know, this is like simple stuff.
Yep.
You know.
Sorry.
Now, if you'd have said something
like... I've let the school down.
I tell you, there's going to be Italian dum-de-dum listeners appalled with what you just said back then. But anyway.
You haven't got any Italian dum-de-dum listeners.
It's about the only place that we don't have any.
There you go. So I can say it willy-nilly because I can get all my Italian history wrong because nobody listens from Italy.
Talking about willy-nilly, I did like your little line about cooking in the nip there because, and dogs being interested in things that dangle.
It's not good. Nobody does it. It's there's something unhygienic about it. There's, you know.
I couldn't agree with you more. However, it was a funny episode. It was a funny incident in that episode. I heartily enjoyed it. Though, you know what? He's a little bit of a shit, isn't he, that little archer?
He really is. I was just about to say, he's a
dick. I quite like him. No, I like him.
But flogging his laptop and saying, well, it's mine. And, you know, and they just bought it for him and everything.
No, bang out of order there. But I do like the way they're setting up the kind of the sibling rivalry between him and his sis. And we are starting, they are now starting to be well-defined, Brooker's archers, which is all to the good as far as I'm concerned.
My favourite bit, though, was Judge Loomis's summing up, where he basically said to Rob, you're a massive shit. I don't know why you even bothered coming here, because you deserve nothing. And I've listened to it twice and I'm planning on listening to it again later. And it's like the bit in Pride and Prejudice when Elizabeth Bennet suddenly loses it with Lady Catherine de Bourgh and says, you evil old cow, why do you think I'd even be bothered? And when Lucia Pilson has a go at everyone outside church in Mappa Nucia and they've been horrible to her. It's one of those moments in literature when somebody, you're just cheering. And if you are in a situation where you've been unjustly treated and you can't do anything, it's tremendously cathartic to listen to those things or read those things again, because it sort of restores the balance. You think, yes, everything is now right. And yes, I have loved this week. Loved it.
No, me too. Though you do get a slight sense of things being tied up with undue haste after, you know, so we've had 2.5 years of slow, turgid, whatever. Then all of a sudden, woof, in a week, it's all gone. Everybody's fine. Though, Something occurred to me, and I must admit, I'm slightly fast-forwarding to yesterday's episode, which I know generally we don't talk about Sundays, but I have to in this context, in that something occurred to me that we've all missed something here. So we've had 2.5 years of unrelenting bad news for the Grundys.
Yeah.
Because actually, Sean O'Connor wanted them to be restored back to their traditional home. That was the whole point of Silly Elf World. It was to remind us of the nonsense storylines of the 80s and the 90s. Yeah. That was the point of all of Ed's bad luck, etc., etc., to have this quick turnabout. Hey, we're all back home. You know, that was the whole point of it. And so, as a lover of the Grundys, and I know not all listeners are, though I worry about the sanity of a listener of the Archers who's not a fan of the Grundys, apart from Glyn Fuller Love, because I've got a lot of love for Mr. Fuller Love, and I respect him greatly.
No, bye-bye Steve doesn't like the Grundys, but he's mad as a box of frogs.
So yeah, Steve, yeah, mate. I've got words, because you'll call later on. Ooh. But anyway.
Yes. But
anyway, so I'm just about, I'm going to say on balance, I'm going to let Mr. O'Connor off again with the Grundys, because at least he said, well, I'm going to just put them back where they should have always been. So, yes. So we've had the whole Helen storyline for 2.5 years. And actually, the subplot has been the Grundys, of which I think we all kind of really missed, you know. So, but and then you realise, oh, you know, they're all back and Joe's 95 and he's happy. That was the point of all those, you know, all those bad luck stories. But anyway. Luce, shall we hit those phone lines? Because we've got a lot to get through. All right.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Who's first?
Lovely William.
Right. So I'm going to leave you to answer William, because you're having a bit of a love thing with him, aren't you?
I am having a bit of a love thing with William.
I just want to make a very quick statement here. Why does anybody in their right mind, why would anybody want the Archers to return to the elf kingdom, elf world nonsense that sort of not necessarily plagues my mind, but kind of upsets the flow and the natural drama of the Archers. I get it. We all need that little bit of, you know, Eddie the Grundy madness. But it's kind of like grating against the backdrop of Robin Helen. I want Robin Helen to carry on. Bruce and Ursula, my God, they need to carry on for like at least another 6 months, tearing each other apart. You know, that's like a case on the side of a case. It's fantastic. Bring it on, man. Bring it on. I think more's the merrier. And as long as it doesn't descend into complete madness. But I think, a vaguely protracted decay and exposure of Rob, especially with the flood. Bring back Charlie to expose it. And the European chap that was sacked as well by Rob. Bring down. I want to see that man destroyed. Helen. I'm there for you now. What was that he said to her? Absolute madness. I still can't take my eyes off you. Bring it on, man. Okay, over and out. William from South London. I'm a gardener in the rain. Oh, goodness. Okay. Bye-bye.
Who would want to go back to the Flower and Produce show and all that with Rob and Ursula? Do we think that Ursula and Bruce are going to hang around? What do you reckon?
I suppose this is all slightly at the largesse of the new editor, and who knows, because the way that everything's been so dealt with so quickly last week, you're tempted to say no. There should be no space for Bruce, because Bruce doesn't want to be in Ambridge anyway.
No.
At best, all Ursula is going to do is come back and tend to Robert from time to time.
Robert!
But you would think he's going to be run out of that village with pitchforks anytime soon if he hasn't done already. And, and when that job offer's rescinded, well, what has he got left?
Yeah. Do you think that's what's going to happen?
It has to, surely. You know, because he was never given a contract.
No.
And verbally, I don't think he was actually even told that he had the job. He's given some strong intimation that, oh, yes, you did well or something or another. Because
right.
I remember back at the time thinking, well, you haven't actually got the job. And then the fact that now Justin wants to have a word with him, that's not good. You know,
No, it's not.
It's not good at all.
And I mean, if Justin is trying to ingratiate himself with the Archers, which bearing in mind he's nobbing one of them, you'd kind of think that he wouldn't be employing somebody who is universally hated by the entire family. You know, he might want to think twice about that. I don't know.
I'm inclined to agree with you there. Makes no sense. Though, looking at the reviews on iTunes, people don't like it when we agree. They like it when we bicker.
Well,
so on principle,
we need
to disagree. And also, I'm going to not completely relent, but I'm going to slightly go back on something I said before. When the Germans were retreating in the Italian peninsula in the winter of 1944... there were various lines. There's the Gustav line, the Arno line, the Genghis Khan line even. And one of them was just north of Florence. So Mussolini was actually, of course, an ally of...
Yay! I was right!
Not really. But you know what? You could argue the case, though. I think if you're trying to secure Tuscany,
you looked that up. Did you or did you not just look that up?
No, I didn't look it up. Why would I look that up?
But well, how did you not know it 5 minutes ago and now you know it?
No, because no, I'm thinking about this laterally, and I'm saying right. So when Italy was formed
looked
as a
unit,
I didn't look it up.
Fibber.
When you were on about all that Map and Lucia stuff earlier on, did you look that up?
No, because I know it.
There you go, I know it.
Yeah, but I knew it 5 minutes ago and I still know it now.
No, because I'm trying to think, right? Would you say that Mussolini was trying to secure Tuscany? No, but he was an ally of Hitler and the Germans were trying...
Well, that's what I meant. If you can't keep up with my sophisticated... I suggest that you look to your laurels, that's all I can say.
Anyway... So have we dealt with the first call?
We have. Lovely, William. Please call in again, William, at any time. To my house. No, not to my house. Rachel.
She lives in Walthamstow.
Does she?
Yeah, you do. That's William. If William wants to get round to your house.
Oh, I see. I thought you were talking about Rachel. No,
no.
It is the South London. That's bloody miles away.
Not on the Victoria line. It's the best line for getting from one end of London to another. It's so fast.
Yeah.
So if he get, because he lives, wait a minute, he was working just south of Brixton. So what's
yeah.
that bus you got to catch down Brixton Hill? You get off there at Brixton, you jump on the Victoria line, bish bosh bang, he's in Walthamstow, and then you don't live too far from Walthamstow Tube.
No, that's true.
You might want to coordinate your diaries and so you don't
yeah.
have.
Other than doing it on a podcast over the internet. Yeah. I know that's how you do it, but it's not.
Shut up.
Anyway, Rachel cannot wait to hear Shula's howls of rage when she finds out about Elizabeth and Dr. Cocky Locky. Dr. Locke wears socks and sandals. She's fairly convinced. That's why I said in the beginning bit about a geography teacher. Yes.
Yeah.
Kind of man who has cord shoulder, has a cord thing, a cord jacket with elbow pads and
yeah.
all that.
Leather elbow
not
pads.
A beard. I can't see a beard because I kind of imagine. I don't think
no,
beards are hygienic, and I kind of think that beard that doctors shouldn't have beards.
Oh God! You know, remember the last doctor that did have a beard? Doctor Shipman. Ooh.
Oh. And also the nurse at my general practice. But let's.
So wait a minute. If your nurse at your general practice had a beard, she wasn't a doctor then, was she?
She wasn't, no. Medical personnel.
Okay.
Should be clean shaven. Yes. I'm a bit worried about Shula, to be honest. I'm not overwhelmed with love for the woman, as we know, But her life is going down the plug hole. She's having like a bit of a midlife crisis. Well, not a midlife crisis. Well, I suppose it is a midlife crisis.
She's not
it's
having
just
a midlife
kind of
crisis.
What the hell is going on? She's got nothing she wants. She's got Alistair she doesn't want. She wants her son with her. He's not there.
No, she's got the stables. She wants them.
Yeah.
She's got Caroline, her friend.
Who's going to Tuscany.
Oh, that's true. Even Caroline can't stand her. She's leaving the country.
It's just, I don't know. She's, you know, and then this man who, it was all very passionate and all very, it was all very sort of intrigue and people, it was all very brief encounter. Was like, no, Richard, we can't. I know we can't, Shula, but and all that sort of all quite passionate and everything. And then he comes breezing back in and he's a middle-aged man with a teenager and she's trying to sort of rekindle that. And he's like, no, lady, look. There's a merry widow over there. I'm going to go and have a look at that, you know.
But we know that's what she wants. Does she know that's what she wants? Is she consciously trying to rekindle a romantic thing with him, or is she just trying to hang out with him?
Oh, no, she is trying to consciously. I mean, if a woman gave you those signals, you know that episode where she said, are you free for sex at any point, basically, you know, after.
Would you have a cup of tea? Think she said, you. Would you like to come round for dinner?
Yeah, and he said, when? And she said,
because Alistair's not around.
At any point, yeah. I will.
And he was busy at any point.
If Alistair is there, I'll just put him in a chair facing the wall and and we'll have dinner, you know. It is. I don't think she's very. It's not anything she'd be proud of, but I'm pretty sure that, you know. And then she feels doubly silly because, you know, you're risking such a lot, and if you're prepared to risk such a lot and then you get rejected, then you really do feel like a book. So yeah.
And then wasn't she slightly miffed when Lizzie came along and he was more interested in her?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was about to say Paul Shuler. I don't think Paul Shuler at all.
But it's like Nigel, you know, Nigel was going out with Shuler initially. And then actually Shuler dumped him. And then he went off with Lizzie. And Lizzie ended up with the, you know, the stately home and all that. And Shuler's got a ratty old stable yard.
That's a bit harsh. It seems to do pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. I know, but you have to deal with horsey people, and they're not easy. Ugh.
Are they not?
No.
How do you define a horsey person?
What?
How do you define a horsey person?
I
don't really know any. Well, I don't know them to be horsey people, shall we
now,
say.
Now, Auntie Jean used to be a groom, I think. She's a horsey person.
Well, she's nice.
She's lovely, yeah. It's the ones that own them.
Okay.
They're usually very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
They prefer animals to humans, so they're not the most empathic people in the world. Mm-hmm. And some of them do it for the wrong reasons, i.e. for social reasons or, you know, class reasons.
Status symbols.
Yeah. There can be a bit of that.
I tell you what, right, tiny little Royfield segue here, and I'm going to be very brief with this. New York, San Francisco got something in common, i.e. That car ownership is actually declining because public transport is relatively good. Stress on the word relatively. Also, millennials can't afford cars.
Yeah.
And also, you've got the rise of Uber and Lyft.
Yeah.
So actually, you know, people are realising that, you know, your car is sat outside your house for 95% of the time. It's a depreciating cost, etc., etc. And many kind of urban planners and many people in the car industry think that car ownership throughout the West will plummet in the next 30 years.
Yeah.
And in 30 years' time, you'll have a car. Having a car will be like riding a horse. It was something that you just have as a bit of a hobby. And they all say this will happen faster than we all think.
Yeah.
You know, in America, the land of the car, already, you know, the amount of young people that actually even want to take the driving test is going down in cities.
Yeah.
Markedly.
We had dinner with some friends who live in Seattle at the weekend, and their teenage son, he said that the dad said he I think it was like the day after his 16th birthday, he was roaring out desperate to take his first driving lesson and take his test as soon as he could and all that. He said his he said his teenage son, he's taken his eventually, but he's got lots of friends who just aren't interested, and they said, why on earth would you, because there's Uber.
Yeah, exactly.
Why would you commit to that much ongoing cost when, you know, it's a really good sign, I think.
Mm. And I was shocked to read that Philadelphia will be trialling 100 driverless cars next year. Next year. The future is happening next year, Lucy.
Oh. It's like tomorrow's world when we all sat there thinking that we'd be whizzing round on hoverboard things in the year 2000.
Mm.
What will life be like in the year 2000? We will all have our own robots.
Wasn't that Back That's to the what... Future? That wasn't tomorrow's world.
No, it was. They said that we'd all have our own robots and we'd all have our own little space shuttle-y things.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What, a space shuttle so we can go to geosynchronous orbit around the Earth?
You know what I mean? Just a
I actually don't. I needed to clarify.
A little hovercrafty thing.
But you just said a space shuttle.
I know, but it's space, as in there's space between you and the floor.
I thought I was the one that was loose and sloppy with language.
I'm loose and sloppy with science and history. That's different.
Yeah, but I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt just about with your little line about securing Tuscany. Who's next?
Leslie Greaves.
Hi, hello. It's Leslie Greaves here. Special diet went on the Twitters. Just ringing about the trial a bit late, but I knew you'd have loads of calls. Having listened to the trial and the podcast, obviously I was really, really pleased about the result, but I really didn't like the trial. I thought the famous voices and all that was so distracting, I couldn't really get into it at all. I thought Graham Seed was hilarious. He was the poshest abattoir man I've ever heard in my life. They seem to be apologising for the fact it was on the radio. They had the court drawings and all that damn whispering to explain what was going on. It would have been better to have an inner monologue from Helen or something, so it's kind of in your head instead of them trying to explain it. Anyway, and we didn't really get that slam dunk moment when Titchy Knob got condemned out of his own mouth. I wanted him to go the full Captain Queeg and start screaming about all you women are the same, you can't even smack your wife around these days, etc., like Bruce, and have him carted off in a straitjacket. That would have been great. Anyway, hopefully things will sort themselves out now. At least we've got the main thing out of the way. And hopefully he'll get his just desserts. Can't wait to see what Susan Carter says about it all. Love to everybody. Bye.
Yes, I feel we have been deprived. She says his Rob's damned from his own mouth moment. He did keep it together in the trial. But then Bruce didn't. So Bruce kind of did that bit for him, that all women are the same sort of thing. They're all whores. What will the harvest be? I mean, he's not going to just take all this lying down, is he, at all? At the moment, he's in the position for him, which is the single most paralysingly terrifying position of people not believing in him.
But no. Another thing which came out from the testimony in the trial was that Rob moves around. He's a serial mover arounder, isn't he? Mm. Jess said we went to Canada.
Yeah.
So he's got a history of this. He gets found out wherever he goes.
Yeah.
And he needs to keep moving.
Yeah.
The difference here is Gideon Jack.
Yeah.
Gidjack.
Yeah.
So you could argue...
Gak. Oh, dear.
So you could argue that, oh, no, he's gonna stay around. But no, he's got a history and a habit of getting the heck out of Dodge 24/7.
Yeah, but he's never had a child, has
Yeah,
he?
No, that's what I've just said.
Sorry, yeah, yeah.
Do you listen to me?
No, not really. I think, yes, that's paralysing. So he's now stuck. That's even more frightening, though, because he's now stuck somewhere where he's going to have to face the climb down. He's now, everyone's seen that he's got feet of clay, and he's going to have to just sit there while and be exposed for what he is, you know, the hollow person that he is. I agree with Leslie. I want to hear what Susan says about it. Having gone from, oh, he's so lovely, to, oh, he's a massive rapist. I had no idea.
As opposed to a little rapist.
But she said,
there's no degrees of rapist, is there?
That's very true. No, there aren't. But Susan said this week, she was using tones that suggested she was very supportive of the archers, and she said, Pat's not going to come along to Joe's thing because they all just need to be together at the moment. And she said it in such a, you know, well, of course, after this awful thing's happened to them. And you think, are you going to make any comment about the fact that you completely called that wrong, Susan, and that, you know, it was, but she just doesn't, does she? She just blithely carries on with whatever the, you know, the easiest, lowest common denominator point of view to take, that's what she takes and doesn't question it.
Well, she reads the Daily Mail.
Yeah.
What do you expect?
Yep. Jan from Cannes.
Hi, Royfield and Lucy and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Jan from Cannes, from Canada, calling. I'm walking on my evening walk, and I'm listening to Dumpty Dum. And by the way, when you put the Kool and the Gang music on, I was dancing out in my community garden, so I did get a few funny stares, but I didn't care. And now I'm walking up the street, Royfield, and I'm arguing with you. So people are looking at me like I'm talking to myself. So they're wondering who the crazed woman is. But really, I think the reason that they didn't have to carry the jury process further is because the one gentleman who was the most like Rob and the most like Rob's dad had exploded with all these terrible expletives and terrible sexist, misogynist language. And I think there was just a giant moment of silence when everyone in that room realized, oh my goodness, we've been listening to him. We've been letting him manipulate our decision. So that was my take on it. And I just thought I'd let you know. Sorry for any background noise. Anyway, thanks everybody, and bye.
She's disagreeing with you because we were saying last week that how come we sort of skipped from everybody going, I'm not sure. Well, I don't know. She is a bit unstable, blah, 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 blah. The jury just suddenly going, yes, send him down. And she said that it was that everybody in the room realised that they'd been manipulated by this bloke who suddenly started spouting unpleasant, misogynistic nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she said that's what happened, and that's the bit that she thinks that we didn't get.
No. I did get that, but maybe I've been led too much by 12 Angry Men, the film. What happens is you have these 12 jurors, and there is one holdout, and the evidence looks overwhelming. Unlike this, whereas a casual reading of the evidence which we were presented to last week, pure casual reading, is that it was finely balanced. You had to really look behind what people were saying to realise that Rob was a total shit. So, and it had to be finely balanced for the purposes of the drama, so that it was a relative split, and it was the prejudices of each juror and what they took into it and how they read the evidence uncritically, and then when it was discussed, then people got convinced either way.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but in 12 Angry Men, it starts off that it's overwhelming. It's just obvious this Puerto Rican boy has murdered his father. I can't remember exactly who. I think it's his father or his uncle. And then it gets chipped away one by one. And because they were following that kind of formula, you felt bereft that you got down to, I don't know, I think it was like 6-6 or 6-5, wasn't it? Or it was 11 jurors. Yeah, 6-5 and whatever. Then all of a sudden, it just stopped, because the great thing is about 12 Angry Men is that Henry Fonda chips away at them, so they keep taking these votes, and it's, you know, it's 11-1, then it's 10-2, then it's 9-3, and it goes all the way down to, I think, about there's only about two handouts, and then the one of the last handouts makes an incredibly good point, and it swings all the way back.
Yeah,
and that's what we were left bereft with this drama. You didn't have it swinging backwards and forwards for dramatic effect. It was actually quite pedestrian.
Yeah,
but you made an incredibly good point that, and other people then commented and said that you needed. Because you had to fit it into, what, an hour, you needed these caricatures of people, you know, the older, liberal, kind of slightly hippie woman with the space cakes, you know, the chav sun reading woman, and then, the, you know, et cetera, et cetera, to make sense out of who was who, because you had to establish these characters really quite quickly. So it wasn't that I didn't understand what happened, Jan. I just thought it needed another half an hour.
Mm, yeah.
If you're going to do it, just do it.
Yeah.
You know.
I think they were in shock enough about the scheduling that it was running over to an hour as it was, to be honest. Another half, they'd have had a nervous breakdown. Should do Lady Garf Garf now.
Oh, now, whilst we're talking about Jan from Cannes, because something happened on the Twitters, Luce. Right, so...
A bad thing?
No, a lovely thing. A heartwarming thing. Jenna17... basically said, I'm in Toronto, are there any dum-de-dummers out there? So I hooked her up, so to speak, with Not Contrary. Mm-hmm. And then with V Littera. And then, like, the next day, there's a lovely selfie of Not Contrary and Jenna17, you know, all smiley-wily.
Oh, okay, yeah. The next day? Blimey.
It was really pretty fast.
It's like Tinder. Flipping heck.
Well, funny you should say that, because, Right.
What?
So then I think Jan from Cannes said, oh, it's really nice to see that Canadian dum-de-dummers are kind of hooking up. So I put out a little bit of a message saying we really need to get Jan from Cannes a pal to hang about with in Vancouver. Now, Christina Auckland said, Royfield, how about... You have a map on the Dum-de-Dum website where people can pin which town they're actually in, and then people can clearly see, and then people can kind of like meet up.
Oh, that's a lovely idea.
Yeah, so Christina Auckland is actually doing this as we speak and wrote me such a full-on email, Lise, with a whole load of technical ease. I didn't know what the hell language the woman was talking about, right? And she showed me a whole load of source code. You know, she's proper. She's not messing around. Now, Christina runs a company called cornerstoneslabs.co.uk. And I'm putting that link out there, folks, because if you need any web or social media development, I reckon you go to www.cornerstoneslabs.
Does she know anything about Russians?
Well, funny you should say that, but we're going to come to that later.
Okay.
Because we think we've stemmed a little bit the Russian deluge, but the tide hasn't completely been turned away, if I'm not mixing my metaphors completely there. But anyway, cornerstoneslabs.co.uk, Christina Auckland runs it, her and her hubby. They're a development company. They build applications primarily online, but not always just online, but they're awesome. And they're building us a map, folks, so you, dum-de-dummer, can go on there and say, I live in Auckland, I live in London, and then other dum-de-dummers can see that you do, and then contact you, and then you can kind of hook up in a non-sexual, even in a sexual way. If you want to hook up in a sexual way, good luck to you, dum-de-dummers. So, and that all came out of Jan from Cannes being alone in Vancouver.
That's amazing.
Well, it's definitely heartwarming.
Yeah.
And that's the strength of the dum-de-dum community.
I hope someone hooks up with our poor farmer in Tasmania. She must be ever so lonely.
Well, how do you know that, A, she wants to be hooked up, and that, B, she isn't hooked up already?
No, I don't mean like that. I just mean...
Oh, you mean friendship-wise.
If you're on your tod in Tasmania, you're really on your tod, are you not?
Mm. Yeah, it's a funny place, that Tasmania, isn't it?
Yeah.
All manner of funny marsupials down there you don't see anywhere else.
Maybe she can hook up with a marsupial. Anyway.
No, we don't condone bestiality on this podcast.
No, we do not.
No.
Not often, anyway.
No, never. You speak for yourself.
Can we do Lady Garfgarf?
Yes, please.
Hi, Dumpty Dum, Lady Garfgarf here again. Thank you very much for the mention last week. And I am very glad I am not alone in my frustration and hatred of Shula. A couple of things. First of all, I need some help. I can't work out if I'm a Siobhan or a Sam, because I've been listening pretty much since I was in utero. And I remember Brian's infidelity and Ruth's kind of infidelity. And I can't remember which came first. So if anyone could help, that would be great. Secondly, Monday's episode was fantastic, if chilling. I feel like I understand Ursula a little bit more. She was very tearful. She's a granny. She's not been able to see little Jack, who she thinks is called Gideon. So she's upset about that. She clearly loves her son. She's clearly probably abused by Bruce. So I kind of feel a bit more like I understand her now. And I hate to say it, like Goddess Diva, I cannot stand the man and have been planning ways to kill him for the past 2 years. But I do feel a bit sorry for Rob. He's a horrible man, but I'm not sure, given the family he's come from and his background, that he could have turned out any differently. He was sent to boarding school at a really early age, probably all boys, taken from his mother, had, you know, probably quite a strict traditional upbringing. I don't know, maybe he was beaten, whatever. Really misogynist, traditional, horrible, bigoted father who has a very narrow worldview and clearly very outdated ideas about gender roles. So maybe that's where his supposed hatred of women comes from. But maybe he believed he was trying to do the best for Helen. Maybe he did actually love her. And he does clearly love the boys in his own weird way. And I wonder if they were girls, whether he would love them as much. Anyway, it's going to be very interesting to see how this storyline unfolds. Thank you very much. You are doing a great job. Keep up the good work.
Lady Garfgarf, saying that the storyline you came in on was Brian's infidelity doesn't really help, because that puts it in any decade for the last 50 years.
She meant Siobhan, though. Come on.
She also said that she felt sorry for Rob.
Mm.
Because she said, I can't imagine after that upbringing that you could turn out any different. But I think lots of people have had that upbringing and they don't all resort to that. Like, he's clearly a deeply, deeply broken man. I mean, he's severely damaged, because you don't get that kind of narcissism without that being inflicted on you from somebody else. And we know who that is. We know that's Bruce. And we know that we have Ursula, who's co-something-ing him, you know, and supporting him in that because she's trying to protect herself, and she decides it's best to do what he wants rather than challenge him in the same way, and she does that for the children as well.
Well, that was the thing which was a message on the Book of Face, where somebody said, I feel sorry for Rob. This person was a gentleman type person and said, I feel sorry for Rob because he's had, you know, he can't see Henry. And I took this at face value. What I would say about this is that I presume the whole reason for bringing in Bruce and Ursula was so that we could believe that a person like Rob exists.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, to understand. I don't want to say the word understand. And to have it, and to gleam how somebody how somebody like that is nurtured or not nurtured as to the way that they then end up being an adult. If you are going to do that, and I completely understand the reasons for doing it, and I think on balance it was right, because you then understood that Ursula is an abused woman of some 50 years vintage. Some people are going to feel sympathy because they're going to, in inverted commas, understand. I would completely agree with you, though, that, you know, going to private school per se doesn't make you a rapist. It might make you a Tory, but doesn't necessarily make you a rapist.
And also, just to chip in for a minute, sorry.
Yeah, go on.
A lot of people that are like him say, or it is said about them, oh, they just, you know, they just are what they are. They cannot help it. But to manipulate as much as he does He has to be able to understand how you can't bend the rules unless you understand them. And he has to understand, he has to be able to understand what love is, how it is expressed normally, blah, blah, blah. He has to understand
He doesn't understand. I disagree with you.
No. I'm not. That's what I'm saying. Shut up. Let me finish. And then you can argue with me. But he has to understand how that appears to pass as normal. It's only, so therefore he has to be able to empathize because he has to understand those rules to subvert them, to make it work entirely.
But it's not empathy though, Lucy. That's where you're wrong. It's not empathy.
Yeah, it's not empathy. No,
it's not empathy. The wrong word. It's like child abusers.
So he can mimic it without.
Exactly. He knows what the social norms are.
Yes.
So they'll act that way in front of other people, but they have these deep-seated desires and instincts. And they can mask those to a degree socially, but one-on-one, all hell gets unleashed. So it's not an empathy. But I think you kind of used the slightly the wrong word when he said, you know, because actually what Rob is somewhat actually of a sociopath, as well as a narcissist, etc., etc.
Yeah.
You know, and actually what I would say about the whole him going off to boarding school, it was, though that's part of it, and that's what when he reflects on himself, he says that he was abandoned by his parents. Yeah. He said that over and over.
Yeah.
And he thinks that he didn't have love.
Yeah.
But there's many people that went off to boarding school who are capable of very loving relationships.
And many, many people who had childhoods with no love and are capable of.
Absolutely, absolutely. So there is actually something which inherently is actually just lacking in him.
Yeah.
And then it's exacerbated by that. And there is this kind of deep-seated kind of anger that he has as well.
Yeah. You know,
fundamentally, he's an island and he's kind of on his own. Emotionally, he doesn't connect with anybody, though he has this almost childlike want to love, but for love for him is control, as you've said before.
It's like a child with a puppy. Mm-hmm. And you say, be gentle with the puppy or it will run away. And they're like, no, but I love the puppy. And then they hurt it. And then they're really surprised when it runs away.
Yes.
Because they cannot control their own want or need enough to actually empathize with anything else, because it's totally about, this is a cute thing and I like it, but it still needs to, I still need to be able to control it and hurt it.
Mm.
And I can't understand how that hasn't worked.
Mm.
I mean, he's genuinely confused, isn't he? He's genuinely confused as to how. And the first thing he said was, she sucked up to the judge and that's how she, did you see Anna Tregaron making eyes at the judge and that's how she got away with it? He cannot cope with the fact that it might not be anything to do with gender or with, sexual power.
But you know what I thought was also interesting last week, and I thought this at the time, then I'd kind of forgot it. A lot of what Rob says is conflicted, in that on the one hand is a deep-seated misogynist. There's no two ways about it, and exactly what you just said about, you know, she was flirting with the judge, etc., etc. But on the other hand, he genuinely doesn't understand what he's done. He absolutely doesn't as well.
No, he doesn't. No.
He doesn't. You know, so, yeah. He needs years and years and years of counselling under Witherspoon's couch.
You can. Narcissistic personality disorder is one of the hardest things to treat.
Mm.
Because the narcissist doesn't believe that anyone else knows anything.
No, that's true. They all think they're cleverer than everybody else. Yeah. They're better looking than everybody.
And they spent the whole time trying to just manipulate the therapist and getting them to see things from their way. They can't understand why that doesn't work. They're, you know, it's just, they're just baffled the whole time. It's just becomes a big game. Nothing for them is real because it's just about power.
Mm. Whilst we're on psychology... if you want to go and pose any questions to Old Witherspoon, he kind of doesn't just lurk, but he's quite active on the forum there. And there's a few people have actually asked him some quite in-depth questions. about psychology and motivation. So if you, dear listener, have a question, nip over to dumdydum.com/forum, go ask Witherspoon. You get a much more coherent and cogent answer than you get out of us, Pear.
Too true. Ellen Hughes, also about Rob.
Mm.
Hi, Dumpty Dum. It's Ellen. I used to be from Chester. I was whispering Ellen from Chester, I think Lucy called me. But I'm now from Glasgow. I've recently moved to Glasgow. I haven't called for a while, and I've been listening to The Archers because it's like a compulsion. I can't not listen to it. But I have found it difficult the last few months. I've had breaks, and then I've sort of been on and off with Dumpty Dum just because I've been busy and so on. But back with you guys now, and I just really wanted to call because throw in with the kind of general love that was put out in last week's episode to say that you guys are great, and the sort of pre-stabbing Archers when it was all just awful with Helena Robb, Dumpty Dum was my salvation and you got me through every week. It's just great to be part of this community and on Twitter, and it makes me smile every time I check my tweets. After every episode, there's always something hilarious said on Twitter. And yeah, I feel I know you guys, which is, yes, you're great. And I love it. So my own prediction, slight concern going forward, it's only Tuesday now, so I don't really know what's going to happen this week. But I am concerned that Rob is going to try to win Helen back. And I hope that now she's feeling strong and independent and has got everything out in the open, she's not going to succumb. But I'm a bit concerned when she didn't tell Pat that she'd seen Rob, that she might be susceptible to that. But let's hope not.
Is Rob going to try and win Helen back?
Absolutely not. Well, no, he might try. But I just want the man run out of town. The legacy of Rob, apart from being the fact that there's Gideon Jack in the village, should be that he's going to turn up every now and then.
Yeah, like a Hazel Woolley. And exactly. Everyone goes, oh, God, she's back.
Exactly, exactly. Just get him out of the town so we can get him out of the village, sorry, so we can just put some balance back into the Force or whatever the hell the Jedi say. Because we need shot of this. The one thing, again, purely with hindsight, do you remember when Helen came back from her honeymoon in the Isle of Wight? Overseas, and the first week, you know, she was bragging about Rob's sexual prowess.
Yeah.
Then the second week, she went all quiet. Mm-hmm. We now know, because actually that was the start of the repeated rapes and stuff, and when he was really starting to abuse her. I've lost my chain of thought there when I said Isle of Wight.
No, the first one was the one on the sofa, wasn't it?
No, it was. You're completely right. You're completely right. But Helen, from the first week she gets back to second week, she does change.
Yeah.
Right? She does change. So you're right about... So we were all witness to the first one, weren't we?
Yeah.
There has been... And I'm slightly nixing another call here, but she has had a metaphorical bucket of cold water thrown over, and she's just kind of snapped out of her.
The sleepwalking that she's been doing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And there is no way that she'd countenance going anywhere near the man. No. Absolutely not. And if she did, right, I think. There'd be the massed hordes of Middle England would descend on the BBC and burn the institution down if she even entertained the thought.
Yeah.
Though.
But that might not necessarily stop Rob trying. I mean, how far does his self belief and delusion go? Is he actually so crackers that he could think?
Well, he is crackers, because what was that line? I've still got my eye on you. Yes. So he's mixing he's got this anger towards her, but then he's still attracted to her. He still thinks he owns her. He still sees her as his wife, even though she's crazy as far as he's concerned. It's all mixed up. It's all mixed up. But no, the answer is no. Helen will not go back with him.
Okay, next one, posed by Christina from Hampshire. Toby, she says,
I think you'll find that's Christina Auckland, by the way.
Yes, she says originally she was from Hampshire.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying.
Hello, this is Christina from Hampshire, originally from Exmoor, Devon. I have just listened to the most recent Dumdy Dum, which was excellent. Really enjoyed it. Thank you very much. I was very affected and in awe of the amazing trial last week and how it all turned out and the extended episode on Sunday. And as I was listening, it did occur to me that perhaps there was two endings recorded so that the people on the jury may not have known what the outcome was, which might explain why there wasn't any explanation for the sudden switch from what seemed to be leaning to against Helen to suddenly to for Helen. I forgot to say, I'm a second-time caller in a row. I have no idea who I am, as in which character came in after I started listening. I will have to go and research that a bit more, mainly because I listened because of my mum for so many years before actually listening for myself. My second point is that I have a sort of mini plot prediction in that I think Toby will be unfaithful to Pip, and Rex will be the one to pick up the pieces, and they will end up getting together in the end. I do feel bad for Rex, really. And I also feel quite sad for Ursula, because she's obviously been through a really horrible time and she never did anything about it. She was never brave enough. So I kind of feel for her, even though I don't like her. Anyway, love you all lots. Thank you very much.
Toby will be unfaithful to Pip and Rex will pick up the pieces. Would Pip care if Toby... I think she would be now, because he's actually sort of got her to the... You know, she's done that thing that you think, no! When you've got it on your terms, and then they say, oh, well, but we could, you know... We could do this properly because I am getting more, and you think, oh, well, maybe this could work then. Maybe there is, and you've sort of chopped off all the kind of the emotional side of it and think, yep, this is the way forward, this is good. And then they say, oh, no, let that bit out, it's fine. And that's when they then go off and do it, because then in their heads, right, they've got you, fine, you're no longer interesting.
Well, I didn't understand any of that, but I'm more interested in Tom and Kirsty.
No, but you know what I mean? When Toby was chasing Pip because she said, I am not interested in you apart from sexually. That's why he was interested in her.
I think that's an oversimplistic reading of it.
She said... Yeah, of course it's oversimplistic, but this is a podcast. Before she said...
It's a podcast, so we can take as long as we need to investigate and get to the bottom of any kind of issue.
She actually said, I mean, the next thing would be she says something like, would you like to move into the Rickyard or whatever?
Rickyard Cottage.
What?
Where does she live? What's it called?
Rickyard Cottage.
That's what I just said.
She will say to him, would you like to move into Rickyard or something? And that's when he'll do it. That's when he'll go off. Because now he's got her, so now she's no longer interesting.
I think all that nonsense about her reading, you know, doing the readings for his drone video,
yeah,
and her great advice to do with marketing, the posh eggs, etc., all that, and the geese. He actually... genuinely, it wasn't just a case of another notch on the bedpost. He actually fell for her. It's as simple as that.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow. You're such an old softy.
I am. But I think he genuinely likes her. Is he an honourable person? Should he have shafted his brother, pun not intended, vis-a-vis his, you know... getting a leg over Pip? No. But still, I think he genuinely... because, remember, there's that ridiculous scene well, not ridiculous, very believable, where he goes round there to get his little bit of a slap and tickle, and she takes a call from Matthew. Trust me, if he wasn't interested, he'd say, go take your call.
Yeah.
He wouldn't care. He'd just say, and then when she comes back, then he'd just get his leg over.
No, but
cared, Lucy.
No, I think it's
what do you mean, no?
Because I disagree with you.
Which bit of what I said was factually incorrect?
He doesn't have to really like her or love her or whatever to not want her to have a call from Matthew. He's one of those people that's kind of, if I can't have, the more I can't have you, the more I want you.
No. You're wrong here. He likes her. And the whole point of that Matthew scene was, and that's the reason why, because she thought he's just an inveterate player, and he is, and he has been. That's the reason why she didn't understand at all the reason why he got upset. Because he genuinely likes, as a heterosexual male, in my experience, if you have a friend with benefits, and they say, okay, I need to speak to Reggie or Patrick or John because I'm sorting out a hookup on another night, you let them take their call. Because that call's only going to last 3 minutes. You're going to get your 15 minutes, you know, in 3 minutes' time. That's fine.
15 minutes?
Whatever. Whatever. Whatever, Lucy. Listen. You know personally I'd last much longer than that. But anyway, I think my point
only boring on the telly, anyway.
My point, I think, is well made here, that Matthew was not cop blocking him. She wasn't. He just happened to call. That's a 3 minute call, that's a 2 minute call. He's gone round there to get his leg over. His reaction was the reaction of somebody who actually has feelings and emotions. Oh, God, Lucy.
No, that reaction was, what do you mean? What do you mean there's somebody who might be more important in this room than me? Right. Well, I wasn't that bothered before, but now I am.
What are you talking about?
That's what his reaction was.
No. It wasn't that. It was the fact that
he upped the ante. As soon as he thought that Matthew was still around, he upped the ante.
You know what? Maybe the pair of us need to go back and listen to those week's episodes.
All right.
I know that I'm right, because invariably I am right. But it has to be said, I do want everyone to live happily ever after. I want there to be unicorns and rainbows and fluffy teddy bears. That is my fundamental default position in life, whereas you're the hard bitten, you've been broken in life and you don't want anyone to be happy type of woman. You are, though, aren't you?
In life.
Well, why are you the way that you are, then? Why don't you think the best in people? Why don't you want happy outcomes?
I do.
You don't. You don't. You never trust anyone, especially if they happen to have a dangly thing in between their legs. You don't trust us.
Because I'm a writer.
And that's true.
We're all horrible. Anyway, Claire from Clapham.
Hello, Dumpty Dum, Royfield, Lucy and everyone around. It's Claire from Clapham here. I didn't ring in last week on the big trial week because I figured you'd have lots of calls, and also I was a bit discombobulated by the whole thing, if I'm honest, and I needed time to reflect. I'm going to start by saying my Archer's vintage, i.e. the person who came in first while I was listening, was Rory being born, and I had to go to the website to look up what his surname was, and it's Donovan. Don't really understand why. I'm guessing it must be Siobhan's maiden name or something. Anyway, so there you go. I'm a Donovan. Whilst I was on the website, I noticed that Lewis is still listed as a member of the cast, and I can't believe he's not dead yet. So that's a mystery and no mistake. Does he have an opinion about Elizabeth at the moment, for example? Who knows? So I wanted to ring and pick up on what was said last week about, you know, what can we get back to now that the trial's over? And there are two people that I would like to hear from. One, obviously, Kathy, who's been missing this entire time. And let me just say now that if at some point Pat says, oh, Kathy's been so supportive over this entire period and we haven't heard any of it, I should be incredibly frustrated and annoyed. I think that's a complete cop-out. They should have actually had Kathy talking to her or mentioned her at least at some point during this whole thing. Or at least have Pat say, well, Kathy's not been any friend to me through this whole thing or something. But anyway, she seems to have completely disappeared, much to our annoyance on the whole. And the other one's about Usha. I mean, like, someone nearly got murdered in her house. And, you know, all this stuff has come out. Surely she has got to come out and say something at this point. Or there's got to be some kind of thing. When did the tenancy start? When's the break clause? I don't know. I want to know all this. And I'm ringing in on Wednesday morning. So last night's episode was the one in which Ian was giving Adam the cold shoulder. And I kind of understand that. And I really felt for him, what with everyone talking about them behind their back sort of thing. Or indeed in front of him, as it happened with Lillian. But I don't know. I feel a bit weird because, I mean, it's not like he didn't know about this stuff. That's the point. He knew about it and he had kept it to himself. And he had managed to maintain a relationship with Adam. And now that it's public, suddenly he's in a massive huff with Adam. I find that a little bit bizarre, but I guess, you know, everyone deals with stuff in their own way, and Ian's been through a lot. I think he's sort of relying on, well, we should all think about Helen as a bit of a sort of backup mechanism to kind of get at Adam. And, you know, who among us might not have done the same thing? So no one's perfect. But I do hope they get over it. And that Ian can kind of come past all this stuff and that Adam can, you know, keep it in his trousers and demonstrate to Ian that he's worth keeping hold of.
She wants to know who has stolen Lewis and why isn't he dead? Because he's still listed in the Radio Times and he hasn't said a word for about 12 years. Kathy, is Pat suddenly going to say, oh, she's been such a comfort. Pardon? and Usha... A murder nearly happened in Usha's house, i.e. Blossom Hill. Mm. Why has Usha not said anything? Why is Rob still living there? And now, this is where I'm confused, and I don't know if you can help me. I'm not sure you can, because quite often this is the stuff that we both get muddled about. Did Ian know all about the affair? Yes, Ian knew all about the affairs that came out in court, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. He's known for quite some time.
He doesn't know about Pavel.
No, he didn't know about Pavel. He suspected...
Did Pavel come out in the trial? No. Does Rob know about Pavel? Yes, because Jennifer told him.
Yes, she did. Yes, she did.
But Jennifer told him about Pavel.
Mm.
And
he saw him with Charlie.
Yeah, but Rob hasn't said anything about Pavel, has he?
No, but we're getting our Eastern Europeans mixed up, though, aren't we? There's Pavel and then there's Stefan. Stefan
hasn't said anything. No, Stefan was just the one that Culvert, wasn't he?
Culvert Gate. Yeah.
Yeah, but Pavel was the one who was having it
was
away.
Bonking Gate. They had sex once.
Yeah. So, and Rob knows that,
but
he hasn't told Adam. He hasn't told Ian that.
No.
He hasn't.
Yes, he did. Because Adam told Jenny. Jenny told Rob that over drinks. And she was all pissed, which I just didn't believe at a moment. Because she would keep her son's confidence. But they dressed it up that she was a bit tiddly.
Oh, yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
So it has all come out in the wash. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Good. Right. Fine. Bill Gallagher.
Hi, Lucy. Hi, Royfield. Bill Gallagher here, second time caller in a row. A couple of points that occurred to me in the outcome of the trial. I think I was as delighted as all of you will be at the outcome, especially of the custody proceedings that happened this week after the trial. Great news for all of us who believe in fair play and justice. But I couldn't help feeling that by the end of the proceedings, we were being toyed with by the writers, especially those of us who are pedantic enough to hope for some sort of technical accuracy in the depiction of the legal proceedings in the drama. I think the final straw for me was the way that the judge who had heard the criminal trial also coincidentally turned up at the family court proceedings a week later. I'm no legal expert, but I'm pretty sure that a serious criminal case like Helen's would have been heard in the Crown Court by a judge specialising in criminal law, whereas the custody proceedings would have been heard in the county court by a specialist in family law. But there we are, it's only a movie. The other thing that was important to me was the opportunity that it gave us to welcome Catherine Tate to the growing band of actors who have appeared in The Archers and Doctor Who. Being a lifelong Doctor Who fan myself, as well as the Archers fan, I've been trying to rack my brains to think who else is on that list. I'm not keeping a categorical list, but I think I can come up with Terry Molloy, obviously, Davros, Mike Tucker, the lady who plays Hazel Woolley, the Slitheen. We've got Simon Williams, plays Justin Elliott, and well-known to Doctor Who fans of a certain age as Group Captain Gilmore from Remembrance of the Daleks. And, of course, David Troughton himself, the son of Patrick Troughton, and been in Doctor Who in his own right. That's all I've got currently off the top of my head. If any of your listeners can come up with any other names for that list, I'll be delighted to hear them.
Yes, I am really not sure about that, Bill. I completely agree that Judge Loomis, he who shall be revered and respected for all time for his excellent choices.
He has the wisdom of Solomon.
I know. Don't we just love him? Maybe we could get him as President of the United States. Rather than a coughing old woman and that lunatic. But anyway.
A bit harsh on Hillary Clinton.
I know. Now, I love Hillary Clinton. I'm just really worried that she's going to get more ill. But I am very surprised that ye olde Judge Loomis would do both. He would do one hearing and then go straight into doing a hearing for the same couple.
All right. Can I just jump in here?
Yeah.
Am I allowed to talk?
Miss Mid-City about that.
Listener, if you want to know about psychology and motivation with the spoon on the forum, if you want to know about legal stuff, Miss Mid-City. I'm forever calling her Mid-City.
I know.
Miss Mid-City on the forum. She's been doing some sterling work on there. Now, I did have a conversation with somebody kind of about this just the other day. And what this person said to me is that... What is definitely unlikely is that there'd be only a period of a week between the trial and basically the social workers doing their report.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
I said the same thing. Now, what she said is that, say if it had been proven against Helen...
Right, yeah.
The case, right?
Yeah.
They need to do a whole... Basically, that potential ramification needs to be factored into the time span, right? So actually, it is unrealistic that the one would happen 1 week and the one the week after. Because verdict can go one of two ways, and a whole load of potential other social reports would need to be done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, i.e., okay, so where is little Gideon Jack going to go now,
etc.,
etc.?
Yeah.
So what she said was, it's baked in circumstances like this that there are months between the two cases because you don't know what the verdict's going to be.
Right. So you'd leave the child with... somebody.
Well, she said it's not ideal, but
no,
but you know, considering that the verdict can go one of two ways, which have massive ramifications on the second case, that you leave time so proper reports and evaluations
right.
can be done.
Okay.
And what she said made a whole load of sense to me.
Yeah.
She said it's unrealistic, not necessarily that it'd be the same judge. Because I don't know. I know there's circuit judges and all sorts, and I don't really understand it. But they're in the middle of nowhere, aren't they?
Yeah.
So you probably would have the same judge turning up. I don't know. But what she said was the time scale between the two is unrealistic.
Okay.
And she poo-pooed it.
Okay. Poo-pooing on the forum. Okay.
Mm.
Auntie Jean.
It's Auntie Jean here again. I trust you all have our gentlemen's buttonholes at the ready. Good. I shall begin. Now... is Ian going to leave Adam? I think he might, in which case Lucy's been right all along and Charlie will be back. because I don't think for a minute Justin will now give Rob that job. I think Justin will put Rob in his place and say, that's it, you're not getting the job now, hopefully. I'm wondering if Helen or Jess or both of them will make a complaint to the police and he'll have to be investigated for rape. But they may not want to go through all the court case again, I guess, so we'll have to wait and see. And does anybody know if Peggy has changed her will? Because technically, isn't Rob still inheriting the lodge or something or other, or money? I can't remember what it is. Cosmo will put me right. But Peggy will have to think about that, won't she? Tom and Kirsty. 666. Far too much information, thank you very much. And anyway, what, Kirsty's just kidding herself. Of course she'll fall for Tom again. She can't help herself. Josh is a little shit for A, selling his laptop that his parents bought him, and B, telling his mother about Pip and Toby just to try and divert his mother's attention. And then, of course, there was David and Ruth, who were interfering in Pip's love life. But having said that, I'm sure all you parents out there would probably look at your daughter and think, you're going out with a horrible person and really we don't want you to go out with him and try and do something about it. So I don't know. Anyway, that, Royfield, I have done in 1 minute and 40 seconds. Speak to you soon.
Are you sporting your gentleman's buttonhole, Royfield?
Now, I must admit, right, when I heard that line, and I'm all up for a good British pun, I did say to myself, come on now. Right, and I
no, but you do see it at country, at you know, country shows and things like that, and flower shows. You do,
people actually have a flower and say, "This is for my gentleman's buttonhole."
Yes.
Oh God, I tell you,
you make it. You put a little leaf behind, and then you have a rosebud or something like that.
Well, it's what I've always said. There's more than one England.
Yeah.
There's London, which isn't England.
No.
Then there's metropolitan England, your Birmingham's and your Manchester's, where there's Indian corner shops everywhere, etc., etc. And then there's this, the countryside. Yeah. And that's in England, which I just don't know, Lucy.
Yeah.
I don't know about snowdrops, and I don't know about gentlemen's buttonholes. You know, I just I don't know this world. I just, it's all foreign to me.
I'll give you a clue. You wouldn't put a snowdrop in your gentleman's buttonhole.
Would you not?
No.
Mm.
Probably really hurt.
Wouldn't that be some kind of kinky sexual pleasure?
Bet someone has put a snowdrop up their gentleman's buttonhole. I'm sure they have.
Yeah.
Is Ian going to leave Adam? Yes. Is Charlie coming? I'm answering Auntie Jean's questions. Will is Charlie going to come back? Yes.
Mm.
Are Tom and Custy Tom and Custy disgusting? Yes. No, they're not.
No, they're not.
No, they're nice.
No.
And it's gonna happen.
Yeah.
Is Josh a little shit? Yes.
Absolutely.
There we go.
But he's entertaining. I'm starting to warm to him.
Shit. Yes. Not like an unentertaining shit like Rob. He's an entertaining shit. Now, Chris.
Hi, Royfield, Lucy, Millie Bell, and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. Chris here, Refuses24 on the Twitters. First time caller in a row, but I've been listening since around Easter, and Dumpty Dum's been the soundtrack to some fairly major DIY projects over the last few months. I'm calling with a legal plot prediction and a bit of a protest about the lack of solicitors in The Archers. I know the scriptwriters wanted to contain the number of characters in the Rob and Helen storyline, but it wouldn't have killed them to have a solicitor involved from time to time. Also, where has the village's resident solicitor been? Surely Usha would have been cross-examined in the shop by Susan at the first opportunity. Mind you, I can't even remember what area of law Usha is supposed to specialise in, and her working life seemed to consist of swanning out of the office for a coffee with Ruth at the earliest opportunity. From the legal point of view, I work as a probate solicitor, and Joe Grundy's much-predicted passing could be the salvation of the Grundy family. I predict that Joe has a secret stash of money, or an old life assurance policy tucked away in the cider shed, probably under a pile of elfin tat. Like a flying horse with taped-on wings, the inheritance could land in Eddie's lap, enabling to buy Grange Farm from Oliver and Caroline, at a reduced price, of course, because of the dam. And he could also lord his newfound wealth over the villagers, who normally look down their noses at him, until his brother turns up to claim his share. I've been trying to work out my vintage for Royfield. I started listening about the time of Ruth's fling with Sam, and became a regular listener in about 2008. So the first character I think I remember coming to the village is Vicky, which makes me a tucker. Not sure how I feel about that.
He wants to know what exactly Shula specialises in. I mean, Usha. Usha specialises in everything anybody needs, basically. She's like the world's most multi... She's like those... You know those things that they advertise in B&Q, and it's a spray or something.
Three in one.
Yes, and there's like a video playing on a loop, and it says, you can use this to clean your pets,
and they normally
use this to wash down your walls, and you can, yeah.
And they normally come on at 2 o'clock in the morning, between 2 and 6 o'clock.
Yeah. So, or a home base. So that is exactly the sort of solicitor who specialises in everything from plagiarism to conveyancing to divorce to adoption, everything. Does Joe have a secret stash of money in the cider shed, and will that enable the Grundys to buy back Grange Farm permanently?
You got to think, though, that Joe is going to have a stash of money because he's been tight all his life. As he's never bought a pint in the book.
But he buys his baccy, doesn't he? With his pension.
Oh, I don't know. And I think we've just pushed this one into the long grass. We know that Joe is going to be around for a few years yet.
I was going to say, the biggest shock is that the bugger's still alive. I don't think we need to dwell any further on them when his demise is.
And you'd think, right, that when Joe... So, I was going to say when Joe kicks it, then the farm becomes... I was going to say Ed's then, but it's just nonsense. It's just a tenancy, isn't it? So,
yeah.
So then just be there forever.
Yeah.
Don't need to buy it.
No.
That question was posed, that call was posed before Oliver turned around and says he can just live there.
Yeah.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Glyn here. Really loved last week's episode of the podcast, Dissecting the Trial. I thought it was really well acted the whole way through. Thought the first 4 days were really well written. Lost its way a bit with the tweeting juror. And the jury scene on the Sunday didn't really work for me. I thought we learnt a lot more about the prejudices of the jurors than how they reached the result. But it was the right result. So great, we can all move on. And we did move on. And what a week we had in Ambridge. Never in the field of soap opera can so many threads have been picked up, so many loose ends tied down, and so many issues wrapped up in so few episodes, culminating in Friday's episode where the Dark Lord was dealt blow after blow from the avenging Jedi Knight that was Judge Loomis with his legal lightsaber. And then Kirsty and Tom, even more enthusiastically, picking up the threads of their relationship. I did wonder when they went inside whether Kirsty would have shouted, "Hi, Roy, just brought Tom home for a quick bit of you-know-what upstairs." It is a very small house, I think, where Kirsty and Roy share. But anyway, was it all credible? Well, I think it was a week where we just had to go with the flow. And in an Ambridge where Caroline and Oliver can find a few €100,000 down the back of a sofa, well, anything is clearly possible. So hopefully all Dumpty Dummers out there are having a good Ambridge week. I wish you all a very good Ambridge week coming up. And as always, a big thank you to Lucy Royfield and all the team for creating this magnificent podcast.
Yes, Glyn says, if Kirsty brought Tom home, it's a small house. Was Roy on the night shift? Was he just sat there with headphones on, catching paintings? They fell off the wall. I mean, what was going on? Yes. It's a bit tricky, that, isn't it? I presume he's still doing a night shift. And is Doodle still there? What's her face? Phoebe.
Doodle. Isn't she off in Oxford?
Oh, yeah, she would have gone by now, wouldn't she?
Maybe enjoying Freshers' Week or something.
Yeah, and now, if Tom's wandering around in his undercrackers in the morning, it'll be like Toby and Pip all over again when Josh
But you
walks.
Know what, though?
Right. What?
Anyhow... Let's say Tom walks out of Kirsty's bedroom, 7 o'clock in the morning, sees Roy in the landing. Roy's going to high five him.
Yeah.
Fist bump him.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Because also, Roy will see it as, right, if there's hope for them, there's still hope for me and Hayley.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, Steve. Bye-bye, Steve. Never
care. Hello, Dumpty Dum, it's Steve here. I'm with Lucy. I thought the hour-long special was just appalling. It was badly written, badly acted, so many caricatures of people. It was just vomit-inducing. I really didn't like it. I thought it was a real lost opportunity to do something really good. But never mind. A couple of things. The Grundys again on my nerves. Why Oliver Sterling's let them run riot in his farmhouse is beyond belief. I know he's got a soft spot for Joe, and haven't we all, but, you know, come on, they're going to wreck the bloody place. They're a disaster area, they really are. You know, Eddie's just such a bloody scumbag, it's unbelievable. I know he's funny, but, you know, if you had those living next door to you, it'd be a nightmare. Really would. They get on my bloody wick, they do, the Grundys. Clary's okay, apart from her emphysema. That gets on my nerves as well. Sorry, I'm a bit grumpy this week. I don't know why. But there you go. Roy Field put a few specials out and said this is the sort of counselling that Helen wants. I'm not sure she needs any counselling. I think she's come to terms with what's happened. She seems fairly strong. And after the Friday episode where she got essentially what she wanted, the boys with her and very limited access for Throb, I think she's, you know, the last thing she wants is some new age hippie weaving yoghurt and talking down to her and putting doubts in her head. Nah, she doesn't need counselling at all. Nah, counselling's rubbish. Rubbish, rubbish, rubbish. Okay, bye-bye. Love you all. Mwah. Bye-bye, 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 bye-bye.
Bonkers.
Bonkers. Very grumpy.
Yeah.
Doesn't like the Grundys. Boo. And says Helen doesn't need counselling. My God, man, of course she needs bloody counselling. She's been on an attempted murder charge. She had people trying to take away her children. She's been under psychological abuse for 2 years from a raving lunatic. If anybody needs counselling, it's Helen.
Mm.
And possibly you too, Steve. I'm not sure.
No, I think you are sure, Lucy. Steve, you need counselling, sir. Help, now, help. Steve, right, I know that we've got this kind of confident Helen back, or we've got a confident Helen anyway, but that confidence cannot come completely at the point of a knife in someone's innards. Absolutely, what she's been through, she will need some form of, it's not to say that she's all going to be put back together and it's all going to be all right, but just to unburden herself of actually what she's been through and just to talk to somebody, absolutely is what she needs. And I know you kind of slightly said it in a humorous way, but almost I take it that you kind of belittle the experience that she went through. This is a drama, so I'm not getting ahead of myself and saying it was all kind of true to life. But no, anybody that's been through that, even just spending the last 3 months in prison, you're going to need to sit down and talk to somebody.
Yeah. Somebody neutral as
yes,
well.
Yes,
yes. Yeah. Hiya, hiya. Andrew Horn.
Greetings, Earthlings. Andrew Horn here, calling in after an absence of a few weeks whilst the trial all happened. I just want quickly to defend the writer for the jury episode. I know it sounded a bit clunky, and it was a bit clunky, but it was very difficult to try and establish 11 new characters very quickly so we could understand what their agendas were. To do it quickly so that it didn't get in the way of the drama too much. So I did feel sorry for the writer there, and I didn't take it as laziness on his or her part. Anyway, this week has been lovely, light, fluffy and giddy with little bits of court action. I'm glad Joe has managed to call off his hunger strike, although I am surprised that the shock of the announcement didn't kill him. I still don't think he's long for this world, but maybe that's just me. In the lightened mood, there have been the scriptwriters have been let off the leash again. So the much commented gentleman's buttonhole isn't the only one, as we ended on a high with Tom being asked to come inside Kirsty. So, come inside by Kirsty. And I'm glad that they're getting together, even if it's only today, it's only in the moment. We shall see. Anyway, I'll ring in soon.
Standing up for the writers of that bloody jury episode. He said, bless him. He said they had to establish 11 new characters very quickly so we could understand what their characters were.
It was about seven. There were a few silence for a start off.
But he said, because it's a drama, the drama came purely out of the characters. There was no other drama. So they could have been a little bit more delicate with letting the characters develop rather than just dolloping them on like they're in a sticker book and saying, you know, Mrs. What's it, the Muslim, and Mrs. Thing, the libertarian, and all this. You know, they could still have been finer about it because it was the characters that brought the drama. It wasn't like there was anything else happening. That was the drama. And that's where the tension was supposed to have come from. And it was just, you know, there wasn't very much tension because the characters were so, as you would say, broad brush, Roy Fitz, you know.
I think, you know, the more I think about this, and without wanting to damn anybody, I try not to think about that post-drama, post-courtroom jury scene drama. It just needed to be longer. It needed to be able to breathe much more. So the pacing could have been a little bit more believable, but also that you things didn't have to be laid on with a trowel in terms of kind of personality. It could have been a little bit more subtle. And also, having it maybe another 30 minutes longer, you would have much more been able to understand the motivations of the various characters in a much more kind of considered way, you know. But it just needed to be longer. And I just think it needed, you needed that, the misogynist, Nigel Havers, to say, you know what, I'm wrong. Or to have that emotional breakdown, as of what happens in 12 Angry Men. I don't have to keep on repeating myself here. But there's a reason why that film has gone through the annals, gone through the ages. It's because it's the most masterful set of plotting. Forget the absolute, just the writing, the dialogue. The way it's plotted is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And they set out to copy that, and it was a pale imitation.
Witherspoon.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Lucy Royfield, Millie Bell, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. We're in the middle of a glorious holiday on Cape Cod, where it's been sunny and warm every day. Hope you've been enjoying the photos. No black clouds were sighted over Pat and Tony's house on Friday, as the Bridge Farm branch of the Archer clan were celebrating, as were all of us. It was odd. I felt genuinely happier hearing the custody news than I did hearing the not guilty verdict on Sunday. Perhaps it was because Judge Loomis, who both pronounced the custody decision and told it like it was when it came to Rob. It was as if God had stood upon high, pointed down at him, and announced, "Rob Titchener, you are truly and really a bastard." And the people rejoiced. Never mind that Judge Loomis had just presided over Helen's criminal trial. It does smack of a conflict of interest, but that's for one of our legal eagles to dissect. I recall that months ago I had talked about how we, the listeners, needed an ending much like the happy conclusion of a Jane Austen or Charles Dickens novel. I wonder if this is how the scriptwriters planned it, or was the threat of an international boycott of the Archers, if Rob was not made to suffer, enough for them to tie the endless story up with a nice bow? Now, is this really the end of the story, or is this merely a little rest stop for us to collect our breaths? Maybe Rob's pathological narcissism will still lead to some awful outcome. I don't know. My crystal ball is hazy. But I'm not going to worry about it now. We have another week of vacation, and I'll continue to enjoy it as much as Caroline and Oliver will enjoy their Tuscan villa. Talk to you next week.
Yes, good old Judge Loomis. It was like a judgment from on high, and it was like he was saying, we've now seen it all. There's nothing left to hide, Rob. You know, everybody knows everything, except they don't, because they still don't know about the flipping...
He's just walked in.
Tilly, she's come in, taken a piece of paper and gone out again.
Oh, right.
It's
like a comedy sound effect to your door.
I know. D40 on it. It's quite noisy, isn't it? Yes, I know. Huge relief.
Maybe you want one of those like liquids you can get from Home Base, which is like 3-in-1 or something.
Yes.
Funnily enough.
Usha Gupta special.
Usha Gupta Franks?
No, she's Usha Franks.
Is she?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know.
Fiona Powell.
Hello, I'm Fiona. I'm a first-time caller-innerer,
although I've been a Dumpty Dum listener for some time. I currently live in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania. I moved to America from Somerset nearly 30 years ago. As far as what kind of listener I am, I recently worked out that I'm a Perks Lewis Hathaway. I first started listening in my nan's kitchen, and I remember young Sid Perks moving into Ambridge from Birmingham, I think. Then I began listening in my own right around the time that Pat Lewis visited her Uncle Hayden. She had a lovely Welsh accent then, and I wish she'd kept it. I remember exactly where I was when Tony proposed to Pat. I was sitting in my car in Wales watching sheep. I moved to America in the late 1980s, and for quite a while, the only Archers I heard was when friends remembered to record the omnibus and send me the cassette tapes, and they usually forgot. Finally, the combination of a trip home and the availability of the Archers on my computer made me a regular listener once again, and that was about the time that Tim and Siobhan Hathaway settled in Ambridge, which makes me a Perks Lewis Hathaway. I work now as a radio producer and an on-air host, which is a posh name for a classical music DJ, for the local NPR affiliate. Before coming to America, though, I was a shepherd. I studied agriculture at college and got qualified in farm management. I worked on dairy farms, I worked on pig farms, I've raised chickens, I've driven tractors, but mostly I took care of sheep. I even taught various shepherding tasks at agricultural schools, such as Brymore, which is where the late John Archer went to school. I'm finding Pip more than a bit irksome of late. She thinks she's God's gift to farming, which she clearly isn't, and I think she may be heading for a self-inflicted bruising. I hope that it's only her ego that gets damaged and nothing else. So that's me done for now.
In the wilds of Pennsylvania.
She's a very clever woman, this Fiona Powell.
She is, and she's a Perks Lewis Hathaway. She said when Pat first came in the thing, in the series, she had a very strong Welsh accent, which has vanished. Look you, there's lovely. How odd!
What did you say?
I said, how odd.
Yeah, isn't it? It's a different Pat, though, isn't it? It's not the first Pat.
Is it or not? Is it?
I don't know.
No, I think it is the first Pat.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Ever since I've been into the Archers, she's never had a Welsh accent. And no. I was actually surprised when we started doing Dumpty Dum and somebody said, Pat's Welsh. I was like, really? But then again, if you're from round about Wrexham way in Rhyl and kind of Brecon, you know, the centre bit of Wales and the northeast, they sound very English anyway.
Yeah.
But she had a Welsh accent is the point though.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Sam here. I've been absent without leave for a very long time. I haven't been listening to the Archers because it all just got a little bit too much, which meant that I wasn't really listening to Dumpty Dum, although you'll be glad to hear I did hear one on the train from New Haven to Grand Central Station in early July as I was coming home from my holiday. Anyway, I'm on the sofa with a big bag of frozen peas on my swollen, operated-on knee, feeling a bit sorry for myself, so no change there. And I just wanted to say that I have listened this week because I heard that it was safe to get back in the water. And I'm very glad I did because I've been listening in floods of tears. I really just wanted to say how very glad I am that not only Helen is home, but that we're all home because I feel like I am now too.
Sam Dean is listening again.
Hurrah.
Hurrah. And I'm sorry about you. Well, I'm not sorry about your knee because it's going to get better very soon. Now it's been operated on.
How did she knack her knee?
Miserable. She's got poorly knees for a long time. She has to have a mild operation now. Ooh, and then she has to have to full on smash it up and put it back together again later on.
Ooh,
which is going to be really serious. So, but she's relieved that she has nice Archers to listen to now because everybody's home where they should be. Yes. Mm. The Grundys are back in Grange Farm. Helen and the boys are back at Bridge Farm and everyone's in the right place. Hoorah! Yokel Bear.
Hello, Dumb Stomach. Yokel Bear here, calling from Yokelshire. It's been a bit of a week of catharsis, really, hasn't it? Everything being put right again. Helen, get the kids. And I loved the fact that you see a bit of the old Pat back, a bit of fighting spirit from Pat, that little confrontation with Ursula. I loved it when Ursula said, "How dare you speak to me like that, Pat?" But Pat's already like, "Yeah, I'm done with you." Yeah, that's just wonderful. Obviously, as you know, I'm a bit of a cheerleader for Team Joe. So it was a good week, really, wasn't it, for Joe? Yeah, really loved the fact he gets to stay at Grange Farm. Though I tell you what, script writers, if you're going to pull that thing where, you know, there's a happy bit and then you bump him off, I'm going to lose my shit, to be honest with you. Because, you know, we all love Joe. Though, also in that scene, didn't know Oliver was so handy with the ferret. So, yeah, it's a pretty good week, I thought. Yeah, and I think it feels as though all the misery of what's happened up till now, it's lifted a little bit. Still don't know what to make about Tom and Kirsty. Part of me thinks, oh, my God, it's going to be a disaster. On the other hand, do you know what? It kind of makes sense. Don't know. Jury's out with me on that one. Let's see how it goes, eh?
Lovely to hear the old Pat back, he says, with or without being Welsh. Yes, she had a nice go at Ursula, didn't she? That was quite nice. She doesn't have to be nice to her anymore. I did like the clunk of the door in Rob's face when he said, "Could I just look at him through the window?" No, goodbye. Bang. Great.
You know what?
What?
And I had to check myself here. If that was me, and I'm wrong here, I would have actually closed the door, but showed him the baby through the window. I actually
really?
Yeah. But I'm saying I'm wrong. But I'm
Why
saying,
would you do
I
that?
Know, I know, I know. Maybe I'm just too soppy. I'm too soppy. But no, you know, I wouldn't have. You know what? You're right. Because actually, I'm thinking too much with my rational brain, which I still think is actually wrong. But actually, if it had been my daughter, absolutely, I wouldn't have.
You would have got him by the...
No, I wouldn't have. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. Oh, thank God for that.
Yes.
You know me better than I know myself.
Andrew
thank
White.
Thank you, Lucy.
That's all right, my love. Andrew White.
Good afternoon, Lucy, Royfield, and all Dumpty Dummers out there in Archer's Land. This is Andrew White calling from Portland, Maine. Been a while since I've called in. A White PWM on the Twitters. On to more prosaic things. I wanted to submit a name for a possible consideration for the Honorable John Archer. That is my husband, John, who is a John Deegan. And third, if I've understood the rules of the game correctly, I believe I'm a Charlie Thomas. In terms of my archersness, that is the character that was getting a lot of play when I first started listening. Thanks for all you do. What a wonderful opportunity to listen and to be part of this community. And take care.
Has a nomination for Order of the Johns, his husband.
Oh, yes.
So, John Deegan is John the what?
Right. I think we're about 12. I think 12. We're at 12. So you're John the 12th.
Oh, I think we got further than that, you know.
No. All right, you know what? Stop there, because I think...
No, if we have an outraged caller in her next week, going, "What the bloody hell are you giving away my title for? I am John the 12th. No, we'll just gradually work our way up until emails stop.
Right.
Then we'll know that we've reached peak John. Debs in Germany.
What? Why? We got a call from Germany?
Yes.
Good heavens.
Hi, Royfield and Lucy. I'm a first-time caller in error. Well, I might be a second-time caller in error because I can't quite work out how to work SpeakPipe yet. I am an army wife in Germany. My name's Debs, and my Archers listening vintage is that my first memory of the Archers was when Clary was complaining to Eddie, saying, "My lips is numb with kissing," when they were courting, before they even got married. So that kind of shows you how old I am. The Archers have been a huge part of my life. I've moved around the world as a PADS brat, which is what we call army children, and now being married to one. And the Archers has kept me with my links to the UK, which is what Sarah Thornton said in your podcast last week. Two things I just wanted to say. I think we've all been a little bit harsh about Pat, me included. I get really fed up with her hand-wringing. But when I think about it, all she's done is voice to her nearest and dearest that she's let Helen down. The fact that 5 million of us are agreeing with the fact that she's let Helen down is irrelevant. What I hope she doesn't do, or turn around to Helen and say, oh, this is all about me and it's not about you and I feel so dreadful. She needs to park that now and get on with supporting her daughter. And she might well do. The other thing that I get really, really cross about this week was the social worker saying, that's it, he's abusive, he's disgusting, Henry's got to get out now. Well, this is a family court hearing. Why wasn't that ever raised before? They were quite happy to leave Henry with him for the last 6 months. So why suddenly now is the social worker being the Ambridge fairy and getting him out? Anyway, love the podcast. Thank you so much for doing it. And it just increases my Archers Listening podcast pleasure so much more. Have a good week. I'm sure it's not all over yet. Take care. Bye.
Why wasn't it raised before?
Do we know where in Germany?
No.
She just said Deb's in Germany.
Yeah, she's on a military base somewhere.
Heavens.
She said, why wasn't it raised before by the social worker? If, you know, if Rob's so terrible, how come Henry was left with him for ages? But I guess you've explained that, haven't you?
Absolutely.
That lady said. That still seems extraordinary to me. Now we have end of the calls. Hooray. That was a lot of calls. Thank you for listening. Now, Ryan Tring in Trivia Corner. He doesn't even listen to the Archers. But he's a friend of mine and his missus is a very good friend of mine. And the Archers is often on when he's in the room. And as he's an analytic, he's like one of the QI elves, Ryan. And he picks up things in the credits and he's always the one who spots when people have been on, you know, strange programmes, obscure programmes. He said Loomis, Sam Loomis was the boyfriend of Marion Crane, played by Janet Leigh in Psycho. So he thinks that's a hint that Rob is a psycho. We're kind of gradually, it was sort of taking us that way. That we had John Loomis who comes in to save somebody from a psycho. That was quite interesting. Right, email from Feek. This is my email of the year. Feek, subject. Message following the results of the trial and the custody hearing. Message body. Yay! That's it.
Sorry, I missed that.
Are you kidding me? The whole thing?
Can you just say it again, please?
Okay. What's the matter?
Nothing.
All right. This is from Feek.
Yes.
It is my email of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Subject. Mm-hmm. Message following the results of the trial and the custody hearing.
Yes.
Message body. Yay! That's it.
I was slightly distracted and right. I slightly missed the punchline.
Okay. Well, that was a bunch of... Anyway, right, next, Paul Robinson. I've just been listening to this week's podcast while walking
from
the
Lassiter's.
Dogs. Yes, in the Surrey Hills, and heard you suggest that Rob may appeal the verdict. He can't. The case was brought by the Crown and Rob was just a prosecution witness. It was not his case. On another subject, why do the Grundys always refer to number one, the Green? They all know where number one is, so why give it the full address? Paul, not from Lassiter's, Robinson.
But then again, I say I address you as Lucy V. Freeman.
Yes.
I could just call you Luce. That doesn't really work.
You can answer the phone
it?
And say hello, Lucy V. Freeman, don't you?
Yes.
You get into a habit of calling
something
a certain thing. Yeah.
On the face of it, he has a point, but actually, it's just a convention. They just call it that. Who cares?
Look, if we're going to start saying who, if we start putting
I don't mean. Who cares? Like, who cares? I mean, it's just, that's just what they call it. So, it's just number one, the Green.
It's not a thing. It's not a reason.
Yeah. It's just, that. You know.
Sarah from Southern Tasmania here.
Ooh, okay.
First time emailer in a row, farmer, agricultural researcher.
I don't know anything about Southern Tasmania.
No.
Other than it's far away from Hobart, because that's the other end.
She said, being such a new listener means the only character to have been introduced since I've been listening is Baby Jack, and I'm not sure if a sound effect track really counts. I thought it was very clever of Rob to take the oath rather than affirmation. I'm pretty sure that the devil swearing by God cancels itself out, and therefore he can tell such blatant lies in court.
You know what? I completely forgot. I didn't even know this was a thing. I didn't know this oath and affirmation. This is all new to me.
Yeah. Although I understand the housing issues in rural England, I have to say if we had the Grundys as tenants, they would have been evicted with no chance of getting their bond back. On the Pip and Toby front, if Pip wasn't aware of Rex's feelings, then she's a bit dense. If she is aware, then she really needs to think about the ramifications of dating Toby. For the Elderflower Cordial Index, locally produced elderflower concentrate is currently $14.60 Australian dollars for 375 mil.
I've got no idea what the Australian dollar is to the pound.
No, but well, we'll have to add that into the spreadsheet and that will mess everything up again.
That's another thing, Lucy.
What? Oh, and also Robert Wilson sent us one.
You're going to let me lose my train of thought now.
$2.69
Oh, okay.
Beaver Elderflower Cordial in wherever he is. He's with you, isn't he? He's in, oh, Chicago. Chicago he is.
Christina Auckland is also, people are going to be able to plot on their map where they've seen Elderflower Cordial and the price of the cordial.
My God, that will save me days of work.
Exactly.
Because my map is frankly getting out of control.
You don't have a map. You don't have a map, Lucy. Lucy, you don't have a map.
A serial killer.
You don't have a map. I know people like to paint vivid pictures when they listen to this podcast, but let's just say you don't have a map. You have no documentation where you have all this elderflower cordial stuff all put together.
At my fingertips, Royfield.
Okay, then. All right, then. What's the highest price we've ever had for any elderflower cordial? Is that your fingertips?
$14.92
Crap.
Yes.
And where was that then?
I've no idea. I made that up.
Exactly. At my fingertips, Royfield. Don't lie to the listeners, Lucy. Sorry. Oh, we got to the end of the emails.
Yes.
All right, smashing. Ooh, you know what, everybody. Oh,
no. We haven't, but we'll do it next week because this show is going to be about 3 days long.
Again. Though, to be fair to me, actually, last week's show was not as half as long as I thought it was going to be.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we were quite restrained in our analysis, and I chopped little bits and pieces out, and it wasn't actually that long.
Oh, good. Right.
And you know this because, of course, you listen.
Yes.
You're such a liar. When's the last time you listened to a Dumby Dum, Lucy?
I listened to the end of this one.
Oh, the end?
Yeah. Because everybody said that they were crying when Survivor came on.
Well, the Rocky theme music.
What? No. Survivor.
Eye of the Tiger.
What are you talking about?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Survivor by Destiny's Child.
I know. But Survivor also did Eye of the Tiger.
Oh.
Anyway.
Should we do Tweets of the Week now?
No. Oh. Let's have an ad break, come back to Millie Bell, and then we can go and have some Tweets of the Week. Thank you very much, please.
When you don't have a roof over your head.
Build that wall. Build that wall.
There was build nothing marked wall. Classified build on my wall. Emails, build either send wall. Or receive.
Build that wall.
I am humbled to have been chosen by the Conservative Party to become its leader.
that Britain is just a small island that no one pays attention to.
A former colony won the right to determine its own destiny.
Hello and welcome to Mid-Atlantic, the show where we look at the news and the views from one side of the ocean from the perspective of the other.
Do you have a National Trust sticker on your car? Do you think you could be best friends with Kath Kidson? Do you spend hours wandering around the airport looking for an organic quinoa cafe because you refuse to go to Burger King? Then Sarah Smith Cloths offer you. Available from Sainsbury's for the posher washer. Proud sponsors of Dumpty Dum.
Good day, everyone. I'm going to start this week's report with something from the forum by Witherspoon. He said he would get right to the point, why shouldn't Helen get primary, if not full custody, of Henry and Jack now? Helen lost custody because she was placed in jail without bail. The previous custody battle was between Rob and Pat Tony because Helen wasn't around. Now, Helen has been found not guilty and has been released from jail. She's living with her parents and will have a much more supportive environment than Rob will have. At the moment, Rob has a job to go to and a mother who will be returning home. And obviously, there are now two allegations of rape against him. He has admitted violence towards Helen, and the episode of mental cruelty against Henry, the shocking soft toy allegations, which we know to be true. It seems like a no-brainer, but will it be? The reason I'm reading that out is it just created such a great conversation on the forum and was a really good example of people jumping in and getting involved. Of course, we now know the result, but up until then, it was a great way to get involved. And I'd just also like to draw you to a link that I put onto Facebook, onto our site, and it's called Hear the Angsty Screams of the Family Lawyers. Now, I'm no kind of lawyer, but lots of things in the custody case just did not ring true. And Lucy Reed, who has written this article, has just explained it so well. So really, really suggest that you go there and have a read if you're interested. Now, we've also had a bit of a chat on Facebook about Kirsty. Really, Kirsty? Really? And it would seem that a lot of people were unsurprised. Some people are like, who cares, there'll be a wedding. And other people are like, yep, Kirsty just run for the hills. Some people have also pointed out that this is the new Tom, so it doesn't really count. Good point. And so if you'd like to get involved with Dee Leary and Rachel Hanna, Pam Cruikshank, Quentin Bennett, Christine Scantleberry, Rachel Kennedy, Karen Cunningham, Alexandra Allport, Terry Gardner, Diane Telford, Rachel Louise, Leslie Greaves, Peter Mabel, and more, jump onto our Facebook page, please. I'd also like... Oh, the other thing is that Andrew Horn posted up something about... so that we have some addresses of people at the BBC. Oh, I nearly said the ABC then. The BBC, so that we could try to get more actors onto Dumpty Dum. So please jump onto the Facebook forum, have a look on there, find an address of someone that you think you might like to write to, and just ask them nicely, could we please have some of the actors onto Dumpty Dum, because we really get a lot out of that. And the last thing I just wanted to bring to your attention is we are having a lot of problems with people hacking our website, and we do need to put some work into this. And unfortunately, that's going to cost a little bit of money. And I know Royfield was very uncomfortable asking for money, but can I beg of you, please, if you get onto the Facebook page, I've put a link on there that works. You just need to donate. Say, I donated £5. I don't know what that is in real money, but I donated £5. It wasn't much that he was asking. We could all do that. We can make sure that our Dumpty Dum is protected as well as possible. So, as usual, I encourage you to get involved with Facebook, where you can talk with me and many, many others. We have a lot of lurker-likers and a lot of very active people on Facebook. So jump onto Facebook, just look for us, Dumpty Dum on Facebook, or go onto our website, dumptydum.com, and look for forums. Get involved there, because as Royfield and Lucy say again and again, without you, there is no program, and we want the program. So until next week, hooroo!
Thank you, Miss Bell. Now, Lucy, Right. Yep. Hit us with your tweets.
Civil Disobedience said, this is about Nigel Havers in the jury thing. Every middle-aged woman in the country has taken Havers off their wood list. Real Scott Veg said, being a farming show, I'm hoping for actual pitchforks when they finally run Rob out of town. That's going to be a very good moment.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Rushton said, just had a call from, quote, John Archer, quote, in an Indian call centre. I tried to talk about sausages, but he just wanted my bank details. Kay Engels. I am loving the valiant work.
What? Carl Engels?
Not Carla. Kay Engels.
Oh. Kay anyway, Engels. It's Karl Marx anyway, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm loving the valiant work the Archers is doing, highlighting men's confusion in the face of women's enthusiasm for no strings attached sex. And this is from Eddie. This is the best Twitter name I've ever heard. Eddie Izzard's Beret, also known as Nanny Sheila 6, said, given that Phil also died in his chair, elderly Ambridge residents well advised to steer clear of chairs. Keep moving, Joe. Don't even bend your knees. It'll all be over. So there we are.
Right. You know what? We've had a good little back and forth, you and I, in this one, haven't we?
We've had a row.
Well, But I've actually half conceded slightly a point to you on a historical front.
Yeah.
But I think it just shows you that I'm the bigger person, because whenever I say something,
it's just
you
not
just...
often you get to say you are the bigger person. Sorry.
You know what, Lucy? Right. You know how to wound a man, don't you? I'm not that small. And anyway, the Dum De Dum listeners have an image like to project.
They think you're like 6'3" and
What? Whatever. DumDeDum.com, go there, we've got a shop. We've got a forum. And, oh, the forum sprung back into life, everybody.
Has it?
Yes. Because, a couple of weeks ago I did say that the forum was a little bit dead, and that was because of... it was so slow, and we're going to come on to things that we need to do and have actually been started to be done on our website. But go to dumdedum.com. We've got a shop, we've got a forum. It's awesome. And Laura Jackson is going to help us to do much, much, much more besides on our website. So go there. Now, iTunes reviews. I've been asking you for the last few months to please put you back into doing some reviews. And reviews, we have them in spades. So much so that we got to number 8 in the UK film and TV podcast iTunes charts.
Blimey. Yes. So we need to thank... Sorry, Simon just brought my dinner in then and I got a bit confused. So we need to thank, from the United Kingdom, Ali 1804, Barbara HW and JTWWWEW, who asks, who chooses the music for each caller in era?
It's a mixture of me and then now kind of them.
People demanding their own, largely.
Yeah, and well, yes, Andrew Horn. saying that I want I'm horny, horny, horny. And then Goddess Diva, etc., etc. But at the start, it was very much at my largesse. But I opened the floodgates when I let in my lovely Vicky Cole, who I've got a massive soft spot. When I basically put on The Lion Sleeps Tonight, everybody's like, well, if Vicky Cole's having one, well, I want mine, blah, 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 blah. You know. Anyway, so there's your answer. Now, over in Ireland, Miss Otis put down her Guinness to pen a review. In the US of A, the Reverend Herbert Layfield said, Dum De Dum is funny, insightful, informative, and kind. It's as English as it gets.
And that is saying something from somebody called the Reverend Herbert Layfield, which is the most English name I've ever heard. Back over the water, on Cloud 29, 5 Stardust, thank you very much, and Metal D said, we are wonderful back in Trumpland. Woo. Florida Flow found the time to head to iTunes and back in Blighty. Special Diet also bigged us up.
you can read my stuff out better than I can. And I wrote it. Oh, this dyslexia is a curse. From the colony that got away, Simpanda commented that it's a great podcast. I have a friend who never misses this show, even though she stopped listening to The Archers. Bah! From the land of leaks at Tiny Ray Ray, iTuned us.
Over in Brexit Britain, Mrs. Chev put a Stedman next to her review. And Broomers65, who said, it's wonderfully inane ramblings, a thoroughly entertaining podcast made by some very talented and erudite people about the reality docudrama that is The Archers, highly recommended.
Now, I have mentioned this before, but she just really did kind of like brighten up my, I think it was my Friday, did old Christina Auckland. And I'm just going to quickly mention her again. She's putting together a map which will be on our website, and she's got an old proper company, and she's doing all this kind of gratis where Dumdy Dummers can pin themselves to it, and this all started
sounds a bit odd, pinning themselves to something,
pin their details, Lucy. Oh, okay, right. So and this all started because Jan from Cannes, who's a stalwart of this website, is over there in Vancouver, and by all accounts there aren't any other Vancouverites that are into Dumdy Dum and The Archers. So, and I'm sure that, and just like there's the farmer down there in South Tasmania, we need to put Dumdy Dummers together. So, cornerstoneslabs.co.uk, we salute you. The map should be ready some point soon. Now, to help keep our little show on the road, you've been absolutely amazing this week. And I'm going to give you a massive roll call of everybody who's been putting their hands in the pockets to stop the bloody Russians from screwing up our website, getting the forum faster, and all sorts. So, I know I'm going somewhat off script here, so Lucy's going, well, where is he going with this? But first, let's deal with Patreon, because there are two ways this can be done.
You can go to patreon.com, search for Dumpty Dum, and you can donate $2 a show, which is about £1.50-ish.
Now, we've got some new patrons that we need to thank. The first one is Claire Howard.
Trying to make my dinner. Anne Charles.
Carl Astral.
Di Middleton.
Miranda Johnson. And
Laura S.
So thank you for agreeing to...
Thank you very, very much,
James. Thank you. Now, I tell you what I have done here, Lucy. I'm going to say at the end of the show that this is a bit of a fundraising episode. I'm going to whack that at the end and then put it at the start of the show.
Okay.
All right. Now, we did mention this a couple of weeks ago, but the Russians were screwing up with our website. And as I just kind of said just a couple of minutes ago, we've done a little bit of fundraising on Facebook, because of the hacking on our forum. But apart from that, we just do need to update the website. So I did kind of put out a little bit of a begging bowl, asking people if they had a fiver, if they could basically contribute to this, because we need to pay our techie. Jesse doesn't work for free. He's a great guy, and actually he's been working on the site kind of much more off than on for free for a year, and he reminded me that he hadn't been paid in about a year, and I went, okay, fair enough, mate, and we do need this work to be done. So as I said on Facebook, I did say that we needed a little bit of work doing, and boy oh boy oh boy did people come to our Aww. rescue. So, you know, we're gonna give you the massive roll call in a little bit. We still do need a tiny bit of help. So if you would like to help us, you can go to dumdydum.com, hit the donate button. We're only asking for a fiver. You know, if you can't quite do that, you can do, you know, just do whatever you can. Brilliant. But as I said, we put out this request on, I think, Thursday, and there's a whole raft of people that we need to thank. First one is Bronwyn Wood.
Glyn Fuller Love.
Claire Wayman.
Carmi.
Helen Palmer.
Lonnie J. Bahar.
Mary Darby.
Sorry, Bryn Ranyard.
Sarah Hydes.
Hello, Sarah. Pam Cruikshank, she of the fabulous Dumpty Dum earlier on.
Mm-hmm. Janet McKee.
Claire Bellegarde.
Denise Tomlinson.
Valerie Bayliss.
Leslie Greaves.
Jackie Rice.
Glenn Alderman. Tessa Herring.
Jacqueline Berto.
Hannah Barrett.
Claire Easter.
Tracy Shevin.
Jenny Allen.
Susan O'Sullivan.
Julie Riley.
Caroline McKendrick.
Vicky Cole.
Love you, Vicky. Karen Cunningham.
Susan Poole.
Claire Howard.
Christine Scantlebury.
Rachel Ray.
Sally Wood.
Sally Bowditch.
Alison Smith.
Jim O'Hara.
Maureen Freiberger.
And K.R. Whitbread.
Oh, we love you. Thank you so much.
We love you lots. We love you lots. As I said, if you do have some spare money rattling around in your purse, hit that donate button, and it's all going to pay Jesse because he hasn't been paid in a year. Now, Dum-de-dum survives on your calls. So to get in contact with us, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe, or you can send us a message via telephone. You can call us on 020-0203-0313105 to leave us a message on that telephone if you can't do SpeakPipe. On the Twitters, you can find us where we're at DumDeeDum. Me, I'm at Royfield. Harriet is at Sambridges.
Sarah Smith is at Sarah_Smith. And I am at Lucy V. Freeman.
On Facebook, we're galloping away with our like a lurkers. Whee! 1,300-odd. And it's just that forum is on fire. Seriously, Lucy, it's like burning ablaze. There's people posting messages and asking questions and all sorts and cracking jokes. It's awesome. If you're on Facebook, type in DumDeeDum. Go and share in the fun.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Now, yes. Any parting shots before I go and eat my dinner?
No, but it's the Archers, so I probably ought to go and listen.
You know what? That's a fair point. All right, Lucy V. Freeman.
Okay, thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.